Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Revolutionary Leadership, Essential Lessons from the Men and Women of the American Revolution, by Pat Williams, with Jim Denny. Foreword by Brian Kilmeade. Narrated by David Cochran Heath. Foreword. Who can deny that America is in crisis today? We face deepening racial conflict, a fractured political system, corruption in our government, run amok social media that undermines our democracy, rises in teen suicide and bullying and violence, protests and riots in our streets, extremism in our media, radicalism on our campuses, threats from terrorists and hostile nations, and a skyrocketing national debt that threatens the global economy. I could go on, but you know as well as I do that much of American society appears to be coming apart at the seams. Who can deny that, at this critical moment in history, America needs leaders of strength and courage and uncompromising principles? Where can we find such leaders in this time of crisis? Only one place. Look in the mirror. You're the leader America needs. I'm not saying you need to run for President of the United States. To solve the crises we face, we need new leadership at every level. We need community leaders, religious leaders, youth leaders, campus leaders, business leaders, leaders in journalism, leaders in every arena of society. As Pat Williams tells us, we need all hands on deck. And that's why you need to listen to this book. Revolutionary Leadership is the story of how ordinary people from the unlikeliest of places came together and turned 13 oppressed and subjugated British colonies into the United States of America. Most of them had little more to offer than a deep love of country and an intense desire to make a difference. In this book, you'll hear the story of an ordinary bookseller, a man without any military training whatsoever, who became one of the greatest generals and artillery engineers in American history. You'll hear about an African-American sailor who sacrificed his life and ignited the revolution. You'll hear about a brave woman in a Massachusetts village who stood guard at a bridge and captured a British spy. You'll hear about a young man who emigrated to America from the West Indies and led a decisive assault at Yorktown, then went on to invent the U.S. economy. You'll hear about a Scotsman who came to America and changed the course of naval warfare. You'll hear about farmers and shopkeepers, society matrons and country girls, frightened young privates and grizzled old soldiers, all with three things in common. They loved freedom. They stepped up. They led. Pat Williams knows leadership. As the general manager of the NBA champion 1983 Philadelphia 76ers and the co-founder of the Orlando Magic, Pat has shown that he knows how to achieve great things in the face of overwhelming odds and tough opposition. His leadership ability was recognized by the presentation of the John Bunn Award at his 2012 induction into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Throughout Pat's 50-plus years in pro sports, leadership has been his passion and his wheelhouse. And Pat Williams knows history. He has visited all the historic sites and battlefields he writes about in this book. He has studied the battles, the politics of the era, the heroes and villains, the famous lives and the obscure but irreplaceable leaders of the Revolution. Most important of all, Pat finds the lessons in the lives of these leaders, lessons that you and I can learn and apply in our own leadership lives today. Pat is a captivating storyteller. Through the stories in this book, you'll hear how the early patriots came together to build, to paraphrase Lincoln, a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all people are created equal. Pat shows us how the founding American principles were engraved on the hearts of those early patriots: liberty, equality, and government by consent of the governed. And Pat shows how the essential qualities of leadership were demonstrated by those early patriots: vision, communication skills, people skills, good character, competence, boldness, and a serving heart. Without these seven qualities, we can't lead. but a leader who embodies them all is ready to start a revolution and take on an empire. The early patriots and the founding fathers were not plaster saints. They had flaws and foibles and eccentricities, and Pat documents them honestly in this book. And I'm glad he does, because I can't identify with or learn from a plaster saint. But I can learn a lot from the real flesh-and-blood leaders Pat presents to us in Revolutionary Leadership. You and I live in troubled times, times that cry out for bold, dedicated leadership. As James Russell Lowell wrote in his poem, This Present Crisis, "Once to every man and nation comes the moment to decide, in the strife of truth with falsehood, for the good or evil side." When their moment came, the Revolutionary-era patriots decided. They met the crisis of their time. They led. Now it's our time to decide. It's our crisis. It's our turn to lead. Revolutionary leadership will embolden you. It will instruct you and inspire you for the days ahead. Whatever your leadership arena, Pat's stories and revolutionary insights will strengthen you for the fight. Brian Kilmeade, TV and radio host, Fox News, author, Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. Introduction. Leadership Forged in Crisis. This book was forged in crisis. The coronavirus, COVID-19 crisis of 2020, was just starting to rage across the globe as I wrote about the events of 1775 through 1783, the crisis of the American Revolutionary War. At first glance, these two eras seem completely unlike each other. Yet the Revolutionary War crisis and the coronavirus crisis are really not all that different. The Revolutionary War era was, like our own time, an era of a virulent, deadly epidemic. The smallpox epidemic began in 1775 and terrorized the newborn nation of America for 7 years, coinciding almost exactly with the 8-year Revolutionary War. Conditions were perfect for spreading the disease throughout the 13 colonies. People were crowded together in military encampments, besieged cities, and ships at sea. Like carriers of COVID-19, smallpox carriers were extremely contagious while showing no symptoms during the 2-week incubation period. As a result, the smallpox virus would spread invisibly through a population before anyone suspected its presence. Historians say the smallpox epidemic of 1775 to 1782 claimed 5 to 10 times as many people as were killed by the Revolutionary War. Then, as now, the epidemic was a leadership challenge. General George Washington, Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army, had to decide how to respond to the smallpox outbreak among his troops. It was his decision alone whether or not to inoculate his troops against smallpox, and it was not an easy decision. Doctors in the 18th century had learned a crude technique for smallpox inoculation called variolation. A small amount of infectious matter was taken from the sores of a smallpox sufferer and introduced to the skin of a healthy person. This would trigger the healthy person's immune system to fight the smallpox infection when the disease was at a weaker stage. Normally, this would result in a light case of the disease. People treated with variolation had to be quarantined to avoid giving the disease to others. In a few cases, the inoculation would lead to a full-blown attack of the disease. Some inoculated people died. At first, General Washington hesitated to inoculate his troops. "Should we inoculate generally," he wrote, "the enemy, knowing it, will certainly take advantage of our situation." By 1777, the smallpox epidemic was seriously interfering with the war effort. Battle plans were delayed by illnesses among the troops. Fear of smallpox kept many potential recruits from enlisting. So Washington ordered all soldiers who had never had the disease to undergo variolation. It was a risky decision. Washington's inoculation plan proceeded in complete secrecy. Large numbers of his troops were incapacitated for weeks as they recovered from the effects of variolation. Fortunately, the British never learned of the vulnerability of the American forces. The rate of illness and death among Washington's troops fell dramatically once his troops were inoculated. The program was a success, and the Continental Army emerged as a healthy, full-strength fighting force. Then, as now, American leadership rose to the challenge of an epidemic. Leadership is forged in crises like this. The crisis of the American Revolution bears other similarities to the crises we face today. American society in the Revolutionary era was deeply divided between opposing factions, the pro-revolution patriots and the pro-monarchy loyalists. There were global tensions and divisions that had to be addressed. Benjamin Franklin and his fellow diplomats had to carry out delicate negotiations with France and other European nations. It was a time of economic crisis in which American money had little value. Great Britain was sabotaging American trade with other nations, and the Continental Congress had no way of feeding, clothing, or paying soldiers. Then, as now, Congress was sharply divided into factions. The newspapers of that era were divided into patriot and loyalist camps, much as the news media today is divided between conservatives and liberals. For example, the Boston Gazette published news and editorials from a patriot perspective, while the Boston Chronicle advocated support for the British crown. Tensions between the two newspapers and their respective readerships became so inflamed that on one occasion, Chronicle publisher John Mine encountered Gazette publisher John Gill on the street and proceeded to beat him with his cane. Leadership was the crucial factor that transformed the 13 colonies into the United States of America. The leaders of the American Revolution invented the greatest engine of freedom in human history, the United States of America, and set a leadership example for us all to follow. That's the driving theme of this book. In Revolutionary Leadership, we look at the lives of great leaders and the times in which they lived. We look at the famous leaders, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Paul Revere, John Paul Jones, and Alexander Hamilton, and discover nuggets of leadership wisdom embedded in their lives. We also look at some not-so-famous but vitally important leaders, Crispus Attucks, Esther DeBert Reed, Sarah Bradley Fulton, Sybil Ludington, and Deborah Sampson. And we discover some of the women and African-American leaders and heroes of the Revolutionary War. In the process of exploring the lives of these leaders, we'll not only learn the story of America's founding, but we'll also learn essential principles of leadership. These principles can be applied in any setting or in any field of endeavor to achieve any leadership goal. I've arranged these stories in roughly chronological order. As you listen, you'll gain a deeper understanding of the chronology of events and the way individual men and women influenced history by exercising their leadership skills. You'll discover what these events meant then, what they mean to us today, and how we can impact the world through our own leadership influence. While researching and writing this book, one truth stood out to me again and again. The United States of America is a miracle. It's a nation that, by all odds, should not exist. Yet it does. During the Revolution, the Continental Army was perpetually short on manpower, short on food, short on clothing, short on weapons and ammunition, short on everything. The brand new American government was weak and indecisive, had no strong executive leadership, and lacked the power to raise revenue. American society was divided, and the patriots found themselves fighting not only the British Army, but also loyalist Americans who supported the British cause. The Continental Army lost battle after battle, yet it miraculously won the war. America had no business winning. There was simply no way a ragtag collection of untrained, ill-equipped farmers, grocers, and shopkeepers could ever defeat the mighty army and navy of Great Britain, the most powerful empire in the world. There were so many times when the cause of liberty hung by a thread, and an American leader stepped up at just the right moment and snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. All you can do is shake your head in wonder and say, America is a miracle of God. Take a close look at the lives of these leaders and you'll realize that the Revolutionary War was an all-hands-on-deck crisis. Subtract just one of these leaders and the entire war effort collapses. Take, for example, Henry Knox. He was just a bookseller from Boston who studied military science and military history by reading books. Improbably, he became General Washington's indispensable artillery officer. Without Knox at his side, Washington would not have defeated the British at the Siege of Boston, nor would Washington have defeated the Hessians in Trenton or ended the war at Yorktown. Henry Knox is hardly a household name today, but it's doubtful that the Revolution would have succeeded without him. The same can be said of so many other revolutionary leaders, starting with George Washington himself. What if the Conway cabal had succeeded in ousting Washington as commander-in-chief of the army, replacing him with the feckless and cowardly Horatio Gates? Certain disaster. What if Alexander Hamilton had never left the little Caribbean island of Nevis to become Washington's right-hand man? What if Lafayette had never left France to serve at Washington's side? Hamilton and Lafayette were the indispensable heroes of the decisive victory at Yorktown. What if they had stayed home instead of coming to America and joining the cause? What if John Paul Jones had not come to America from Scotland to battle the British on the high seas and on the coasts of England? What if Esther de Burt Reed had not recruited thousands of women to raise money and sew shirts to support the Continental Army? What if Baron von Steuben hadn't arrived from Prussia to show General Washington, during that miserable winter in Valley Forge, a better way to train and care for an army? And then there's Nathanael Greene, one of my favorite leaders of the Revolutionary War. He's the most underrated general in American history, the man General Washington chose to succeed him if he was disabled. Nathanael Greene was raised a pacifist Quaker, but he had a lifelong fascination with warfare. The fighting Quaker could easily have chosen the teachings of his church over his yearning for freedom. He wrestled with a deep inner conflict and ultimately chose to go to war. Had he chosen otherwise, the Revolution might have failed. From the tragedy at Lexington to the triumph at Yorktown, every American leader had to stand up and be counted. Every leader had to make a contribution, make sacrifices, and persevere beyond the limits of human endurance in order to make freedom ring. I don't believe America was inevitable. I don't believe America just happened. I'm convinced America was a miracle of God. It's inconceivable to me that the chain of events that resulted in American independence could have happened without divine intervention. And it's equally inconceivable that American independence could have happened without great American leadership. We are living in a time of crisis. I'm not talking about the COVID-19 crisis. I hope and pray that by the time you listen to this book, the coronavirus pandemic is a thing of the past. But even after we have ceased to worry about COVID-19, the world will still be in the grip of global crises. America's skyrocketing national debt threatens to plunge the entire world into a global Great Depression. Civilization is threatened by terrorism and unstable governments wielding nuclear weapons. Dangerous authoritarian regimes are vying with Western nations for domination and power. Climate and environmental uncertainties cloud our future. Racial strife and ideological divisions are fracturing our society. Once again, America needs a miracle from God. Once again, it's all hands on deck. No one is non-essential. Everyone's indispensable. Continue on. Listen to these stories. Then step up and be the leader America needs now. Be the leader for today's American crises. Pat Williams, Orlando, Florida, February 1, 2021. 1. Samuel Adams, the father of the Revolution. Most Americans know Samuel Adams as a name on a beer label. But Sam Adams, a cousin of the second president of the United States, John Adams, was one of the earliest and most important figures in the drive toward American independence. During his lifetime, he became known as the father of the Revolution. Yet Sam Adams showed very little leadership ability in his youth. In fact, his father, Samuel Adams Sr., was convinced that his young son was destined for failure. Samuel Adams was born in Boston in September 1722. He was one of 12 children born to Samuel Sr. and Mary Fifield Adams. In those days of high infant mortality, only 3 of the 12 Adams children survived past age 3. Samuel and Mary Adams raised their children in their devout Puritan faith. A wealthy Boston merchant and landowner, Samuel Adams Sr., sent young Samuel to the best schools, Boston Latin School and Harvard College. Academically, Samuel was second in his graduating class at Harvard, but the college president, Benjamin Wadsworth, arbitrarily demoted him to 6th in a class of 23 because Samuel's father lacked a gentleman's education. The aristocratic snobbery Samuel encountered at Harvard reinforced his opposition to the rigid class prejudice and elitism of British society. Samuel's parents sent him to Harvard to study for the ministry, but he chose to study philosophy and politics instead. He graduated in 1740 and earned his master's degree in 1743. His master's thesis statement demonstrated an early desire for revolution against the British crown. Translated from the Latin, Samuel's thesis question read, "Is it lawful to resist the government if the welfare of the Republic is involved?" Responding in the affirmative, Samuel Adams. At that time, 3 decades before the Declaration of Independence was written, Adams' bold advocacy of resistance to the crown must have sounded more like treason than patriotism to his fellow colonists. Most colonists considered themselves British subjects, not American patriots. Though Adams was only 20 years old when he wrote his master's thesis, he was well ahead of his countrymen in pondering resistance and revolution. The successful failure. Samuel worked briefly in a counting house, a bookkeeping and bill collecting business. He hated the job and wanted to become a lawyer, but his mother talked him out of it. For a while, his parents tried to persuade him to become a clergyman, but their efforts were to no avail. When Samuel Sr. realized his son would never enter the ministry, he lent him 1,000 British pounds, the equivalent of about $200,000 today. Samuel was supposed to use the money to launch a business. Instead, he lent half of the money to a friend. The loan was never repaid. He lost the rest on bad business deals. Samuel Sr. concluded that young Samuel had no enthusiasm for business and was probably unemployable. He gave his son a job in the family malt house business where, he hoped, his bright but financially inept son would do no harm. A malt house is a building where cereal grain, such as barley, is soaked in water, allowed to sprout, then dried as malt. The Adams Malt House probably sold malt for brewing beer and distilling whiskey. It's unlikely that Samuel Adams ever brewed beer, despite his name being a popular beer brand today. In January 1748, 25-year-old Sam Adams launched his first successful business, a weekly newspaper called The Independent Advertiser. It gave him a platform from which to preach against oppressive British actions, such as impressment, seizing sailors from merchant ships, including American ships, and forcing the sailors to serve in the Royal Navy. Samuel's writings were heavily influenced by the English Enlightenment philosopher John Locke, who promoted natural rights, especially the rights of life, liberty, and property. That same year, Samuel's father died, and Samuel took over the family estate. He discovered that one of his father's business ventures, a failed banking enterprise, had put the entire estate in jeopardy. His father and other investors had established a bank to stabilize the local economy by issuing its own paper money. The British government and the Loyalist governor of Massachusetts had forced the bank to close. Throughout the 1750s, Samuel Adams battled the commissioners of the Massachusetts General Court who, on behalf of the British Crown, launched scheme after scheme, many of them clearly illegal and corrupt, in a bid to seize the Adamses' estate. That long battle only inflamed Samuel Adams' hatred for oppressive government and tilted him in favor of revolution. During the long legal battle, Adams wrote essays in the Independent Advertiser denouncing British oppression. He attacked the commissioners for trying to seize his father's estate and exposed the commissioners' profit incentive for corruption and dishonesty. His newspaper essays generated a public outcry, and the commissioners were fired. This cause-and-effect action taught Adams the power of the press in gaining public sympathy and political leverage. From tax collector to political leader. In 1749, the year after his father's death, Samuel Adams married his pastor's daughter, Elizabeth Checkley. She gave birth 6 times, but only 2 of those children survived. Elizabeth died in 1757 from complications following a stillbirth. In his eulogy for his wife, a grieving Samuel Adams said that Elizabeth had run her Christian race with remarkable steadiness and finished in triumph. A year before, the Boston Town Meeting, the citizens' council that governed Boston, appointed Adams tax collector. Because of his strong sense of compassion and fair play, he was reluctant to collect taxes from fellow citizens who were going through financial difficulties. His lenient nature made him popular with the people, but the town meeting held him personally responsible for the shortage in collections. After 9 years on the job, he was £8,000 behind in his collections, equivalent to $1.6 million today. Adams parlayed his popularity into political support. The people knew that his concern for their well-being was genuine, springing from his Christian and pro-liberty convictions. Having failed as a tax collector, Adams turned to a career in politics. He served in both the Massachusetts House of Representatives and the Boston Town Meeting during the 1760s. He organized opposition to oppressive British tax schemes, such as the Sugar Act of 1764, the Stamp Act of 1765, and the Townshend Acts of 1767. He also led a boycott of British goods. As a devout Puritan, Sam Adams was a peace-loving man, and he saw armed revolution as a last resort. His hopes for a peaceful solution were dashed in May 1768 when a 50-gun British warship, HMS Romney, sailed into Boston Harbor and began the impressment of Bostonian sailors. Unrest in the city was already high when, on June 10, 1768, British customs officials seized the Liberty, a sloop owned by the popular Boston merchant John Hancock. When British sailors from the Romney came ashore to take the Liberty in tow, Bostonians rioted, forcing British officials and their families to flee to the Romney. The British government sent army regiments to Boston to quell the riots. Reinforcements soon arrived, and a full-scale military occupation of Boston began. On March 5, 1770, the Massachusetts colony was stunned by the Boston Massacre. During a time of troubled relations between British soldiers and Boston citizens, a mob gathered in front of a British soldier standing guard at the Boston Custom House. As the sentry endured taunts from the mob, he was joined by 8 more soldiers. The crowd threw stones and snowballs at the soldiers, and the soldiers fired into the crowd. 5 Boston civilians died. The tragic incident stoked revolutionary passions throughout the 13 colonies. After the Boston Massacre, Samuel Adams, John Hancock, and other leaders met with the governor of Massachusetts and with Colonel William Dalrymple, the commander of the British troops. The Boston delegation demanded the withdrawal of troops and an end to the occupation. To reduce unrest, Dalrymple agreed to move his soldiers to Castle William on an island in Boston Harbor. In April 1770, the British Parliament repealed all of the Townshend Act taxes except the tax on tea. In newspaper essays, Adams urged his fellow colonists to continue boycotting all British goods until Parliament removed the tea tax. As long as the British government continued to tax tea, it legitimized the
sample complete. Ready to continue?